when the topic of music came up, I was reminded of a music program that very convenient. It's a student-oriented one, so it's mostly on the child that's learning to play. It's based around Christian music, hymns and such things as that. And I was sharing it with someone and later in the day and realized that I should probably have put that up. I should have shared it with the whole group. So I'm sharing it with you now. The name is Music in Me. And I went on the computer last night to Google it to make sure. And it's good if you put piano books or piano or something afterward. There's something else that's music in me that's not the right thing. But if you type that in, you'll find it. It's friends of ours are using it up in Norway. They do not have a piano teacher, and their children are playing hymns, and their family is now developing worship around that. And it's the oldest is 11. The next, I think he's 8 now. And they're learning with these books, so there's success for you to see. I also spoke with a couple of people about homeschool children with special needs, that their learning style is different. You know, there's a square hole for what we think about for learning styles, and they're just not fitting in. They're more of a round peg being asked to be forced into a square hole. And so if you have a child that you think may be in this type of situation, or it has been decided that they are, and you know for sure that they have some issues, you might want to Google in Nathan, N-A-T-T-H-A-N. Those letters stand for something, but I don't remember what they are. And if you Google that, you will find it. It's a whole plethora of information, and it comes from a Christian perspective. So you might find that particularly helpful. I wanted to make sure, since it was happening in little conversations, that I was sharing that in a larger context.
All right, she told you to Google something twice. I'm going to tell you not to do that.
Uh-oh.
Because there is another search engine called Good Search.
Oh. Go ahead.
GoodSearch.com. And if you use that, every time you use it for a search, a penny will be given to whatever charitable organization you put down. And if you put down that you are searching for LifeWork Forum, every time you search something, we get a penny. We got a check for 75 U.S. dollars not too long ago. Not a lot of money, but it's more than we had. And it's a way for you to donate to us without cost to yourself. Also associated with it is something called Good Shop. You can shop at a number of places. Now, I don't know how that works in Kenya. But you can shop at a number of places, and a percentage of that sale will go to the organization that you tell it to give things to, which, of course, will be LifeWork Forum. We know that.
LifeWork.
Okay, that's all for the business this morning. Our desire this morning, as we change pace just a little bit, is to illustrate the balance and the joy, the balance of joy and recreation with training and discipline. How many of you went to a public school? How many of you had fun? Oh, some. I'm rather surprised at that number. I can assure you I never had too much fun in public school. But public school is not intended to be fun. And sometimes when we take our public school experience home, we feel that it's supposed to be the same way. We're now the teachers and the headmasters, and we will be harsh, and we will whip these children into shape, almost literally. Doesn't need to be that way. And what we'd like to do is dismantle the myth that learning and education have to be difficult and uncomfortable and just plain drudgery. They don't have to be. Actually, it's a bit surprising that this myth of drudgery and education being co-equal, that it's still around. Folks are still struggling with the idea that they need to justify educationally everything they do. Well, it's just that not that way. You don't have to justify everything that you do educationally. You just have to see to the nurture and admonition of the Lord in the teaching of your children. First, I want to look at the historical background of games and learning. In both Hebrew and Greek, the languages in which the Bible was written, except for a small portion of Daniel, which was written in Aramaic, numerous and different words are used for the word that we translate into English as teach. Teaching is the heart of God's plan for redemptive history. Today, we're not going to look at the content of that teaching. We're going to look at some of the methods of teaching. Pedagogy, again, if you will, using that big word which just describes how you teach. We don't have any examples of family teaching in the Bible, but we do have the example of Jesus and his disciples. And that was personal. It was intimate. It was up close and personal. It was eyeball to eyeball. It wasn't somebody lecturing a massive number of people. Although, we may remember the feeding of the 5,000, there were times when there were large groups. But Jesus and his disciples were much closer. He used not only lectures and sermons, but parables and object lessons. As examples, he used fish, fig trees, wheat, various other kinds of fruits, vegetables, and animals. Things that were around, things that he could lay his hands upon. Imagine the excitement when he illustrated his teaching on faith by walking on the lake. Would you have gotten excited if you saw this guy walking on the lake? It's the guy that's been teaching me. This is the guy that I'm learning to trust and to worship. And he's walking on top of the lake. It was so exciting that Peter tried it for a while. In his historical background, we can look at both scripture and tradition. I want to look at scripture just a little bit first. And we're going to start with Nehemiah chapter 8. Have to find it first. Chapter 8, verses 5 through 12. Nehemiah 8, beginning in verse 5. Ezra opened the book. All the people could see him because he was standing above them, and as he opened it, the people all stood up. Ezra praised the Lord, the great God, and all the people lifted their hands and responded, Amen, Amen. Then they bowed down and worshiped the Lord with their faces to the ground. The Levites, Jeshua, Bani, Sherebiah, Jamin, Akub, Shabbatai, Hodiah, Maasiah, Kalita, Azariah, Josabed, Hanan, and Peliah. I usually try to get somebody else to read all those Hebrew names. They instructed the people in the law while the people were standing there. They read from the book of the law of God, making it clear and giving the meaning so that the people could understand what was being read. Then Nehemiah the governor, Ezra the priest and scribe, and the Levites who were instructing the people said to them all, This day is sacred to the Lord your God. Do not mourn or weep. For all the people had been weeping as they listened to the words of the law. Nehemiah said, Go and enjoy choice food and sweet drinks and send some to those who have nothing prepared.
This day is sacred to our Lord. Do not grieve, for the joy of the Lord is your strength. The Levites calmed all the people, saying, Be still, for this is a sacred day. Do not grieve. Then all the people went away to eat and drink and send portions of food and to celebrate with great joy, because they now understood the words that had been made known to them. Verse 5 begins with, Ezra opened the book. This celebration that ensued a few minutes later was all about the newly rediscovered Word of God. Verse 8 goes on to tell us that Ezra and the priests read from the book of the law, and they were groups of Levites, and they were going around to the people in the crowd and coming up to them and saying, Brother, did you understand the word that was just given? Let me explain it to you. And then they would stand around in groups and talk about what it was that Ezra was reading. They hadn't had the word in quite some time. It was new and not so new to them. And the Levites made sure that they had understanding. And all the people were weeping with joy over the rediscovery of the word of the Lord. Ezra reminded the people that it was a sacred day. And did he encourage them to get down on their faces and cover themselves with sackcloth and ashes? Not this time. At times, that's appropriate, but not this time. He told them, the joy of the Lord is your strength. Now go home and have a party. Go get some good food, drink some good wine. These were Jews that were probably dancing too. And send some to the other folks who may not have anything prepared. Party, because God is good. Enjoy yourself, because the Lord's word is here for us to enjoy. They were to celebrate because they now were beginning to understand the words that had been made known to them. God's people were instructed in his word and then told to go out and celebrate. And they did so with both understanding and enthusiasm. This is at least one point in God's record of Jewish history where the concepts of joy and understanding of God's word are brought together. It's not all drudgery. It's not intended to be. We can read God's word with a smile on our face. It's only one example. There are many. But now, tradition. God's people. Throughout history, God's people have been known for their feasts and their festivals. It's not just the Jews, the Baptists too, you know. And an occasional Presbyterian. And then everything in between, Methodists, Congregationalists, they have their potluck suppers. Among some Presbyterian groups, they call them pot providence. And they try to outdo one another in the foods that they bring. And they enjoy themselves. In a very real sense, storytelling was and is a primary pedagogical method for the Jewish nation. Oral history. Some of the learning games of Israel were created out of necessity in response to awkward, difficult, or dangerous situations. In Judaism, something so simple as spinning the top is really not so simple as it appears. Most of us have seen or played with a top. There are various kinds. You can just spin some of them, or some of them you push up and down and get them started and they spin like crazy. Well, the Jews have something that's called a dreidel. During the time of the Maccabees, the Jews were imprisoned for the crime of studying the Torah. There are other times that Jews have been imprisoned simply for the crime of being Jews. While in jail, the Jews would gather together and play dreidel. But what they were really doing was studying the Bible. They couldn't have Bibles, but they could have this toy, and they had Hebrew letters on them which represented certain teachings in the history of God's people. But when the guards showed up, they started giggling and laughing, and they were just playing with the top. And thus they were able to defy the enemies of Judaism. Games today continue to play a big part in the teaching or learning process of the Jewish culture. I want to read you an excerpt from a modern catalog for a Jewish school. It reads this way. The weekly classes create a fun environment where the children can express and explore their Jewish culture. They're captivated with stories and games. They sing and dance and paint. Almost every week, the students bring home arts and crafts created during the class, dreidels, tasty latkes, matzah covers, challah bread, kiddush cups, graggers, and more. They also bring home a zest for Jewish life and culture that brings new liveliness to the entire family's Jewish experience. Now, is that summer camp or is that school? Well, it's intended to be school. It's Jewish school. Our roots, Judaism. And they learn by experiencing all these things. And notice it even said, dance. They dance. They sing. They learn poetry. They play games. And all the while, they're learning about being Jewish, being God's people. There's no reason that we need to throw that baby out with the bathwater. Sandra, I believe that you have handouts.
Are you done already?
Yeah, no. Just that one of the handouts that she's going to give you is a dreidel that you can cut out and construct.
I'm trying to decide what's the best way to do this. And we've been in this situation. I know that grown-ups, we act very mature and all of that, you know. We think that we call ourselves grown-up. But I have a funny feeling that if I start handing these things out right now, everybody's going to be looking at, oh, that's really interesting, and we're going to lose your attention. So just as when I taught children in school or my own children at home, I think I will wait until the end of the instruction, and you may each come up and choose one. Is that all right?
That's no fun.
No, it's no fun.
Okay, sorry. But I'll show you what they are so you know. This is a dreidel. I'm sorry I didn't think of this, but I could have put one together for you. But the directions are right on here. You just cut it out, and these tabs are where you glue it. This is a little hole. You put a pencil in it so it actually makes the top. And it has the Jewish symbols, four of the Jewish letters on there, and how to play the game. The directions are on this half sheet, and it tells you what the symbols stand for and a little bit about the Jewish history. For example, the letters actually represent the phrase, can you read this?
Nisgadol Hayasham.
Okay, and that means a great miracle happened there. So the dreidel itself and these symbols specifically have education for the Jewish heritage. So to begin with, I'll put this over here. So be sure when you take the dreidel that you take the directions of how to play the game. And thank you to the each committee that had that done. They did this on nice sturdy paper for you. Yes, sir.
Did they play with the dreidel at that party with Nehemiah?
Probably not. Historical dates
not.
Are off.
They were too busy drinking wine.
So let's continue this historic combination of fun and learning in our homes today. Not just sort of like you're tired and you want the kids to be able to do something that they don't actually need your presence, and so you say, oh, go take out a game and play it. But I mean, to really incorporate games into the learning process in our homes. And before you get too nervous about that, like, what will people think if we play games? Ooh, that doesn't sound very serious. What are we accomplishing? Or even in our own hearts, I don't know, can I justify this as education? Let me just tell you a little bit about games. For example, games teach character. So Kurt talked about the history, and I'm going to talk now about games as tools, tools of learning, if you will. And character is the first area that I think is very important. And games really have a way of getting this into ourselves, too. I won't tell that story. Okay. We teach, when you're playing a game, you have to have rules in order to play the game. And in order for it to work well and for everybody to have a good time, you have to follow the rules. Now, if any of you have ever played with games with children, you'll find if they're a little bit behind, they find ways to say, oh, well, it's okay if we just, and they want to alter the rules to make it so they have a better chance of winning. I think that's part of our human nature. And my grandchildren try to pull that on me now. And by the way, I have their picture up here for you. Want to see it today? You just hit the space bar and you can see our grandchildren up here. But when they do it to me, I don't take it very long. And I say, well, if you want to change the rules, then I don't know how to play. And so we'll have to put the game away. And that's the end of that. So you follow the rules or the game doesn't work. That's very important in terms of character development. Taking turns. It's not always me first. That's huge. And I've noticed that playing with some of the younger children that haven't had a lot of opportunity playing games, that they think it's always time for them to roll the dice or spin the dial or whatever. Now, you can do whatever you want in your household. In our household, we always decided that the youngest would go first. The youngest seems to come last in so many different things. Permission to do certain things, access to certain things. They have to wait until they're old enough. So when we played games, we always let the youngest go first. And I think that we put that in the directions for the dreidel game, too. So taking turns is a big thing about character. It's not always me first. Also, attitudes about winning and losing. If you have a child in your family that's particularly competitive, you'll know that when they don't win the game, they can be very upset. And so now you have the perfect opportunity into which to teach, what's supposed to be the right attitude, you know, from Scripture, from what we're teaching spiritually. The spiritual lessons can be woven right in there.
Pet peeve time.
Uh-oh.
I have a pet peeve about this particular attitude. I don't know if you do it here. I certainly hope you don't. But in America, with the younger children, when they're learning to play baseball or soccer, they have these leagues where you aren't supposed to count the score. There's only one word for that, truly.
Honey.
Ludicrous. Well, there's another one. Stupid. You don't learn about winning and losing and disappointment and encouragement and all those sort of things by saying to the children, well, don't count the score. Everybody's equal. Everybody's good. Of course, every kid has got the score exactly in their head. They know what's going on.
Yeah, they know it anyway. But at some families I've seen where they're playing games, and what you actually see is siblings helping each other to strategize and work together. It isn't all about me and I have to win and come first. And really, you might want to choose games as a way to implement the character development in some of your children's lives. If you notice that a child has trouble losing, then choose a game where you think they might lose and work on that attitude. Another place where games can work as good tools, I've kind of alluded to it, but is in relationships. Relationships. Building family time together. Now, it's not just that we're around the house hanging out. And I think I mentioned this yesterday. A lot of times we think, well, I'm homeschooling. We're together all day long. What's the big deal here? But is it really quality time? And I don't mean quality time from an educational, you know, academic kind of perspective, but just being together as a family. I think that I suggested having a family night once a week. And certainly games and being together that way gives us an opportunity, laughing and joking and encouraging each other in our strengths and supporting each other. Sometimes when we would play games together, Kurt would pair up with the youngest, and they would be a team, and then the rest of us, Jenna and I, would play separately. Or sometimes we would pair it up. We would play the blue eyes against the brown eyes because we had two of each.
Blue eyes rule.
Yes. did we ever play the girls against the boy? That's probably not a good one to do, huh?
I hate to demolish
probably all of not. You. Probably not. Yeah. So anyway, getting along together. That's another part of the relationship thing that goes on. You may find, I know this probably will never happen in your family, but if you'll notice that there are two siblings that are just not getting along very well, if that ever happens, you might choose to put them on a team for a game. So they're going to have to strategize together if they want to win. What game do you choose to play? Do you choose to play a game where you know one child has a weakness and they're never going to have the opportunity to win? Or do you choose a game that's particularly aimed at the younger children in the family and the older ones need to have a proper attitude in relationship in that relationship that it's okay to play a game that's a little less sophisticated because the youngest is able to play and knows the directions, the rules extremely well. It's their opportunity to shine. Do you ever let a younger child win for a change? We didn't do that too much.
No, since from the time she was about 3, she could beat us.
I know. Yeah, yeah, that's true. But think about that, you know, that in all of life, the youngest is always the slowest, the least able to do things, et cetera, et cetera. And it might be nice to give them an opportunity to win the game. And for the older ones to know that that's something that you can do and it's okay. You're not going to die if you don't win the game. Play in teams, I've mentioned that, so that you can then build relationships in the family that will carry on in other settings. It can be easier there, but then it can be the foundation for then asking that same pair to possibly do a chore around the house together, setting the table as a team. We had friends that have, in the end, they had 9 children. And she was pretty clever at this because what she did was at the end of every day, Dad was due home about 5:30. And at 5 o'clock, she would blow a whistle. It was a great, big, loud whistle. They lived out on a farm. And the whistle's name was Charlie. And whoever had done a pretty good job that day of following along and so on would have the opportunity to blow Charlie that day. So 5 o'clock, the chosen child would get to blow Charlie really, really loud. And all the children would pour in out of the fields or from the barn or wherever they were. And she would say, all right, you two sweep the dining room. You two set the table. You two pick up the living room. And so within 30 minutes, the house was in order for Dad to come home for them to have dinner together. And I know my friend Becky really well. I'm sure she paired them up in ways that needed to be done that day. And she would switch out the chores. Another area, and this is probably pretty obvious, but another area that games can be tools is for various skills and abilities. For example, counting. Our youngest grandson just turned 6 in December, and it was really hard for me because we'd already developed a real gaming kind of opportunity with 2 older ones when they came to visit. And then when we added the youngest into the combination, he was still struggling with counting his way around the board. You know, you have a little kid, and they're holding a little game piece in their hand, and they have to count one number for each square. That's a pretty good skill, and it's a lot of different things being added together. It's small muscle coordination to be able to pick that little piece up and put it once in that little square, and once in the little next square, and at the same time be counting. 1, 2, 3. So just be aware, if your children are younger and you're just getting started in this, that it's going to be that slow at first. He's now all past that, and he just marches right around the board and has good strategy techniques, too, at 6. It can facilitate the manipulation and recall of information, too. Some games, you have to be able to answer questions. And that is a very, very important skill in education. It's one thing, some of you maybe didn't have this very often, but for you to be able to have information and store it in your memory banks to be able to manipulate it and then pull it out where it's needed. So your teacher might give you a basic fact, and on a test, the fact is asked for in exactly the way the teacher gave it to you. You pass the test, you get an A, that's really great. But then in everyday life, that information is needed in a slightly different way, in a slightly different usage. Some people are not able to call it up and use it. But games can cause that to happen and give you opportunities to develop it. Simple things like math facts. Instead of just knowing your times tables, 4 times 0, 4 times 1, 4 times 2, 4 times 3, if you're playing a game with dice or, oh, I don't know, do people do that? Christians do that, yeah. Yeah, we did anyway.
Yeah, they don't dance or go to movies.
Oh, okay, good. So those things can be developed in a gaming sort of an environment. Also strategies, knowing when and how to use certain pieces on the board. We play, our oldest grandson, who's 13 and still loves to try to beat me at the game called Sorry. Do any of you know the game called Sorry? It's a board game? Yes, some do. Okay. There is a certain strategy to that. And one of the things that happens is if you take your piece and put it on the other person, the square somebody else is occupying, you send them back to home. Now, at the moment, that sounds like a lot of fun because now my grandson has hit my piece and sent me all the way back to the beginning. Yes, he loves it. However, his piece is right near mine, and when I come out, then I send his back home. So he's learned over time that sending me home might not always be the best strategy for winning the game, and he's learning that. Chess is another excellent game for this, by the way. And you'd be surprised how young children are that can learn how the different pieces move. As a matter of fact, I think I stopped playing chess with William. He's the oldest. I think I stopped playing chess with him when he was maybe 8 because he kept beating me all the time. So I wouldn't play anymore. Interaction. It sets the stage for personal interaction with outside material. So it doesn't always look like you're teaching something. For example, a game called, well, it pops into my mind right now, Journey Through Europe. And we happen to live in Europe now, and we have traveled there off and on. But the reason our children know about the cities of Europe and the countries of Europe is because we play this game. The cards are dealt out, and you have to, the way you get your cards, you have to go to all the cities that are on your card. And go back to your home. And so they learned where they were because they were actually moving them with their hands and had a goal to accomplish. So it doesn't seem nearly so painful as if I had spent a month teaching all the countries of Europe, all the capitals, something very important about each one, like the Eiffel Towers in Paris or any of those things. It all came up in cards on the game, and the more you remembered, the more you were likely to win the game. It was really incredible. As a matter of fact, our youngest won that game all the time. And
98.3% of the
time. And I mean, we play to win when we play. We play to win. So we didn't. She just kept winning all the time. And when she got married a couple of years ago, I wrapped up that game and snuck it into her hope chest so she would discover it later on. So she inherited that game. Here is a quote that I think is really helpful. I hope you can see it there. It says, "You tell me, I forget. You teach me, I remember. You involve me, I learn." And if any of you are like me, there's a lot of information that was crammed into my brain in schools growing up that I was able to answer on tests. I did fairly well in school, but I have a short-term memory. So once that test was done, it was gone out of my brain. But the things that I really got involved in are the things that I've been able to retain and put to use in the rest of my life. I'm just going to say really quickly, one of the ways to do this is to personalize the experiences that you have with your children. I don't know, I'm trying to get out of the way. Can you see? For example, if you go to an art museum, and I encourage you to take your children to an art museum, they will tell you, oh no, little ones, they won't really get anything out of it. Oh, start taking them young, if there's a special exhibit in town or something like that, you can go for what for just a little time and then go home. And when you're looking at the artwork, whether it's statues or sculptures or whatever, take a minute in a room and say, in this whole room, which painting or sculpture or piece of art do you like the best? Make it personal for them. Involve them. Which one would you like to take home and hang in our house? Where would you put it? If you can, pick up a postcard on the way out of that painting, or maybe another painting by that artist or sculpture. So here's a perfect example of what I mean by this, and I'll use myself. When I was a kid, I learned to play the game cribbage. How many people know of that game? Oh, only three or four. Oh, a few. I'm going to have to work on this. You guys got to respond. Come on now. It's a game that it's a board with little pegs, and there are math combinations that you play with a regular deck of cards, and they need to add up to 15 when you're figuring out the best cards to keep in your hand. They need to add up to 15. Well, I was a kid. I learned all my math facts. I did really well, but manipulating them in real life wasn't so good. Well, I'll tell you, I know all the combinations up to 15. I could do them really well. I went to stay with an aunt who had back surgery, and I spent a couple of months there while she was lying in bed. I played cribbage with her. And so 7 and 8 is 15, 10 and 5 is 15, 9 and 6 is 15. I learned them all really fast. Our grandson's now learning it, so he's coming up with some of those. But it's because it was important to me to win the game, so I remember those. I've already told you about Sunny and the journey through Europe. Now, I don't want to underestimate the last area of using games as tools. And so I did put it at the end, but I don't want you to miss out on it. And that is a big one now. You know, I've told you character, relationships, skills and abilities. The last area is enjoyment. And Kurt's already alluded to that, that enjoyment is definitely a part of what God has for us in life. And so making academic material more palatable is certainly a good way to go about it. It can really take something that's a battle. Like if you have a child that really can't stand math, then start looking for games that have math in them, have numbers in them. So numbers will become their friend instead of their enemy. And sometimes you'll notice, I've noticed this a lot, that children that have to sit and do a worksheet or work on lessons have difficulty sitting still. But if you're playing a game and they're into the game, they'll be able to sit still a whole lot longer. And that helps you to develop their attention span, which is really important. All right, now for the next point, and this is the last one here, but I want to go quickly through some games, some kinds of games that you can, or that are available. And it's another handout, which I'm not going to give you again for the same reason. It's a pink, this is the pink sheet. And I'll put it right here, so when you leave, you can go along and take all of them. The front is a list of what I call manufactured games, store-bought games, and some of them may be familiar to you. Bingo, Racco. Has anybody heard of that one? Oh, it's a good old game. I got it at a yard sale for 50 cents. And it's got numbers and cards with numbers, and you just have to put the numbers sequences in order. Thank you. Sequences. Yahtzee. That's another dice game with numbers on it. Big Dice. This is a game. It's just two big spongy dice, and you roll them. And at first, you might just have it with your little ones. It's fun to bounce them off the walls or whatever. And when whatever turns up, just tell them they have to read the numbers on there. Then after a while, well, what is two and three put together? What does that equal up to? Or multiply them. Or you can play with more than one child, and the little ones have to read them, and the next ones have to add them, and the next ones have to multiply them. It's a great game. Mad Libs. How many people, Americans, should know that one? Mad Libs, do you know of it? Okay. You guys look more and more like people living in Maine than I have to tell you. When you drive along the streets in Maine, in America, and somebody sees you and they recognize you and they want to say hello to you, they're driving their car and they do this. You have to look really closely. It's just two fingers, really, you know. That means, hey, how are you? Nice to see you today.
I believe you were a little over-enthusiastic there.
That was a little too much?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm asking, how many people know Mad Libs? And I get a few heads going. Encourage the speaker. Raise your hand. Or okay. So Mad Libs, that's nouns and verbs. And you can, once you get these things, you could buy one and then make up your own at home. Battleship, outburst, I'm just reading them, but I'm going to hand them to you, this to you, so you don't have to write them down. Hangman, you know, that's a game we played as kids on paper, but you can buy them. So Hangman. I think it's also on the computer now, too, if I'm right.
Everything.
Okay, sorry. Candyland, Spill and Spell. Gemstones was another one that I discovered when the girls were a little bit older. They're really nifty because they look like jewels, and one is just a regular cube, and another one is a hexagonal cube. They're all different colors. You can see through them. I mean, our girls love to handle them just because they were like jewels, and they all had numbers on them, and you roll them out, and you'll see if you buy the game. Anyway, gemstones, scategories, the ungame, bananagrams. Now, I know people here know that. I saw somebody with a bananagrams game, sort of like Scrabble. Hi-ho Cheerio is a great game for little ones. You spin the dial and take these little cherries and put them on the tree, take them off the tree and put them in the bucket and so on. It's a great game. Apples to apples, shoots and ladders, journey through Europe. That might be hard to find today, but tangos. If you have a child that's having spatial awareness issues, tangos are a really, really good one to have. It's a box full of different shapes, and then they make houses out of them, you know, triangles and pentagons and things like that, and they build. Some of them you're supposed to follow a pattern, but other times you can just be creative and do what you'd like. Scrabble Junior, Pictionary Junior, Bible Pictionary, all kinds of board games, chess, checkers, backgammon, Mancala. You guys ought to know that one. And cribbage.
When's the last time you saw that?
We saw that in the dust when we were up in Gorenet. We went for a hike in Gorenet, and we were walking back, and I was just kind of looking around. And there was a Mancala board scooped out of the dust and a pile of stones right next to it. Somebody had obviously sat in the shade there, created their little game of Mancala, and played right there in the dust. My granddaughter, Caroline, who's now 9, I don't like playing that with her. I haven't quit totally yet, but she'll wipe me out. I don't know how she does it. I put all of my concentration into it, and she beats me pretty much every time. Card games like Crazy Eights and Old Maid, Go Fish, War. I mentioned that yesterday. Slapjack, Noah's Ark, Snap. All kinds of games that are like that are out there. And they're not very expensive. You can pick them up. And once you learn how these are made, you can make your own. I have a whole list here of homemade games that you can do. You can adapt them for the ages of your children or for their interests or for the situation that you're in. For example, here's a game called Categories. We did this, and now I'm going to tell another story. Okay. This is Categories. I'll show you how it works. Now, oops, my markers. I think they're in the bag. This is a game that I played in college. I'm sure it developed my intellect tremendously. We would sit around the cafeteria and everybody just had a pencil and paper. You draw a chart like this. And you can have as many boxes as you want. This is just my sample. Okay, now let's think of some different categories. Now, I mentioned in the manufactured games, there's one now. It's been developed. I wish it had been me. It's been developed into a manufactured game now called Scategories. Okay, it's very fancy. But we did it back in the 19-whatever that was, on paper. So let's think of some categories. For example,
shout some out.
Cars.
Good. Cars. Countries. Food. That's a good one. Fruits. Oh, no. Let's do something because that's so much like food. How about animals?
Animals.
Okay. Now, you do it just like that. You're sitting around together. You say, hey, let's pick up some categories. And you could be like, or you could have five columns, or, you know, if you're big, smart people, you could have 10. Anyway, if you have young children, maybe you have three columns. I don't know. And then you have to decide, oh, I put those words in the wrong place. That's all right. So, and then you have to think of a word. You see how easy it is. You can build a board and you can fix it too. And then you have to have a letter for each one of these boxes over here. And so then you say that too. You say, okay, give me a four-letter word. Only a nice one. Okay, I have one all picked out already. We're going to use E-A-C-H. E-A-C-H. Then we say, ready, set, go. Come up with a car that begins with E, a country that begins with E, a food that begins, and so on. An animal that begins with A, put it over there in the animal column. And you have a set period of time. I don't know.
Till the bell rings.
Till the bell rings when you're supposed to be in class. Anyway. So, I mean, it's a simple game. Okay, you got that one? Okay, no money, loads of fun. Yes, sir.
Just to make sure everyone's aware of, once you've done your grid, you each say what you've got, and any that other people have got, you cross them out. You only get points.
Oh, yes, we should go. That's right. I guess we have to do the rest of the directions. Yes, that's right. So then, when you don't say all that out loud, everybody does their own work, and when you're finished, you go back and you say, okay, cars that begin with E. And if somebody else has yours, like Kurt said, Edsel. I'm pretty old. I know Edsels. I probably would have written Edsels too. So that one gets crossed off. It doesn't count. Only those that are a unique answer that nobody else, and you're not allowed to make them up. You can't. Yes, but we have to stay within reality too. Thanks for that. So, okay. You understand that one? It's actually a load of fun. We still do it. I lost my paper. Here it is. Homemade games. That's where I am. That's one of them. Another one that I'm going to give you is right here, and it's called Preposition Bingo. And you're going to take a bingo card. These are nice. You can thank to each committee because they made this on the nice sturdy paper for you. And you'll notice the bingo card has a free box in the middle. Everybody always has to have a free box when you start. And here are the directions. Now, this game is written, a friend of mine shared it with me. She built it for her own children, and it's about prepositions because her son was having trouble with them. The directions are here. You make the little cards, and you cut them out and so on and build the game. But it's built on prepositions because that's what she felt he needed to work on. But you can take these same directions and put it around any subject that you need. So have this, take it, enjoy it, but adapt it to what you're working on in your home school. Books of the Bible. We took old business cards and turned them on the back and wrote the books of the Bible, one each. And we had enough old business cards, because we had moved, that we did double sets. And then we used them, first of all, just the girls each had their own set, and they were learning them and putting them in order. We'd shuffle them up, and they had to lay them out in order. But once they got to know the books of the Bible, then it became a game. And we shuffled them up, and everybody got a certain number of cards, and you put down whatever it was on the first. whatever the top card was, you put it down. And if in your hand you had the next book of the Bible that came after or before that book, have you ever played that kind of a game with numbers? That somebody puts down a 3 and you can either put a 4 or a 2 and that kind of a game. It's like that, only you make the books, make it be the books of the Bible. And adapt how fast you go by the skills that your children have. You can make flashcard games of all kinds that as long as you get the facts right. And you can use the games as simple as you do war. When you play cards with war, you know, everybody has a set of cards, and when you lay one out, whoever has the highest number, you get all those cards. Doesn't have to be numbers. You could have it be something else. You can skip rope or bounce a ball while you're saying the basic facts. This is really good. If you have a child that learns with their body, they need to be moving. Have them stand and bounce the ball while they're doing their 4 times 0 is 0. I almost said it wrong. 4 times 1 is 4. 4 times 2 is 8.
Give it up on your head.
Okay. you can do oral. We would call them, because of our school background, we would call them pop quizzes. You know, where you walk into a class and the teacher says, okay, time for a quiz, get your paper out. I'm going to give you the questions, you answer them. But you don't have to call them that. It can be a game in the car. If you've been studying things in astronomy and you're driving along in the car, you can say, you know, I'm really thinking about this particular constellation. What can you tell me about it? And make it into a fun thing together in the car. It can be a positive attitude. It doesn't have to be drudgery and work. Simple board games you can make. As simple as this was. As a matter of fact, friends of ours, they just did that. This is a bingo card. But you can make one that is a long road. If you have a boy that's interested in cars, then get a great big piece of paper and set up a road that goes all the way around and divide it into sections and have cards with questions on them. Have their input, depending on the age, and build it. They have their card sitting here, and if they answer the question correctly, they get to move it 1 or 2 or 3, depending on the difficulty of the question. Older kids will sometimes just create the thing without any help from you at all. You could do slapjack. I don't know if you've ever played that. But with a deck of cards, you keep turning them over and over. But when a jack comes up, you have to slap it with your hand. And whoever's hand is on the bottom, they get all the cards. You could have nouns and verbs if you're having something like that that you're teaching in your house. And so if it comes up, a noun, a noun, a noun, a noun. But when a verb comes up, you slap it. And then you get all the cards. Now you've got a game going. So you want to keep, when you do this, you want to keep a positive, game-like, fun attitude while you introduce it and while you're working on it and all of that. So make sure that when you bring this activity to the children, that that's what it actually is, that it's a game. If in your mind it's educational and you've put your heart into creating it and getting this situation all set up, and then you say, okay, now we're going to play some games and you're going to get these answers right. You've kind of spoiled what you're trying to create, okay? And I think I've said it but I'll say it again. Make sure that you adapt the rules and adapt the content and all the other aspects for the ages of your children and for the ability levels that they have. That's what we've been talking about the whole time, really, about the masterpiece, the unique work of art that God is building in your family. And these games need to feed that. Now, you wanted to talk about that, didn't you?
Now, you're going to be able to pick up this pink sheet, which has lists on two sides, and I'm sure you recognize...
I'd just like to give a commentary on why this chart looks like it's from me.
Thank you.
I went to a public school.
I'm sorry.
I was born in 1978, for the record. And my generation in Kenya is called Watoto wa Nyayo. Now, one of the reasons I'm homeschooling is because one of the things I missed about my schooling was we played. My favorite week of school was called with Yaklozi. Leah remembers that? So does Patrice and Karobia.
Oh.
It was the last week of school.
Yeah.
We just played. The bell rang and we continued playing. And it's this, the week you went to school earliest, if you remember.
Yeah.
You were in school at 7. Okay? Now, a generational shift has happened here in Kenya. I don't know if it's happened in the US, where kids no longer play. So kids go to school to read. They have these bags. They have to be to have to catch the school bus by 6 o'clock. When we went to school, our games were natural and organic. Okay, I played Monopoly at 15. Okay, I played Dictionary in campus at the university. Some games I think I played as an adult. Okay, but the games we played, now that you've given us yours, I'll give you a few of ours.
Good. Thank you. Thank you.
Now, we played Sheki. Leigh, remember? No, Leigh, it's coming alive. where you drew a grid, and if you're a good player like me, you manned the first line and the middle line.
Yeah.
And the intention was the other team to come all this way and then go back without getting caught. If you're caught, you're out. Okay? We played Blada.
Yeah.
There you go.
You take the tube of a tire and cut it into strips, and it would start here. So it'd go in, apart, in, out, then it would move higher to the knees, to the waist, to the shoulders, to the neck. And then when it go to the neck, it would have Mkondesho. Mkondesho 4 up to Mkondesho 1. Now the girls would put their dresses in their panties and jump in there and play till the sun went down. We had better. Better, you took wood and then you put the bearings of a car.
All bearings.
And you'd have 4 boys or 6 boys piled on this piece of wood. And one is the one controlling. And you'd have these boys pushing you. Now, sometimes you'd leave the better taking going that way and into the ones taking the corner. But that was okay. We played Mngari Ngari. If your mom sent you to the shop, you had a circular piece of something in the wire, which you got from a hanger, and you just ran with that. We didn't need bikes.
You drove.
Yes, you drove it to the shop.
Yes.
And of course, most often they ask, what are you sent for? You couldn't remember. But that was okay. Then, for your indoor games, our indoor games, we'd take a piece of string, you remember, Leah? Then you'd put like this and put like this, and then you'd give someone, then it gives you, and until it's better.
Yes. Cat's cradle.
We play Bano.
Marbles.
You throw.
Yeah.
We call it inching, last incher. Then a good player like me, you bring Tata and say Trisex. I don't know how we played yet.
Bonyoks.
Then you do Bonyoks. Ah, Karobi are playing. Then you do Tata. Onyango Buru. And then you play.
And a disclaimer of Krakis Bay.
Krakis not Bay. If you had a spider. And then there was one very interesting one.
Only one.
We'd call it statue. Now, statue, kwanza mnakatana. Tukatani statue. Kwanza mnakatana. Now, when you have katana statue, which is to agree to the game, if your brother finds you without having a finger like this, he tells you statue, you stop wherever you are, and you become a statue.
Uh-huh.
Now, those days, for the record, we ate rice twice a year. Christmas and Easter. Now, this day, your mom has had an advance payment. And she's made rice. And fried meat.
Wow.
And just to cap it all, it has tomato sauce. Tomato sauce. Yeah. Then you get to the table. And you had katana statue with your brother.
Your bigger brother.
You're the bigger brother. And just as you dig in the first tablespoon, you hear statue.
Oh no!
You cry.
So how does one follow that? Okay, he did not give you a complete list. And neither did we. Neither did Sandra.
He brings up a very good point that I think we're going to discuss in the question, and that is this whole thing of what we used to do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Yeah. But what is now happening with our kids now?
Well, he didn't mention King of the Mountain. King of the Mountain?
King of the Mountain.
Oh, yeah, you find a pile of something anywhere, and you try to be the one who's up there, and everybody else tries to dislodge you. Today we call it politics. All right. When you receive these, you will see on the back side computer games. How many devices do you have with you today, each one of you? We don't want to know? Yeah, you have four with you just today. Yeah, and some at your office.
Obviously.
Yeah, right. We came out of church. We were at church a couple of weeks ago and came out. And here were these two kids under a tree. And what are they doing? Playing with the iPad. And these kinds of things are more and more accessible. We were in Bucharest, Romania. And we were staying in a house where there were two Filipino children who got hold of my phone. So now I have lots of games on my phone. But they showed me all the games that all the kids in the whole world are playing. They were in Romania, they were Filipinos, and they were showing me the games that they were playing in other parts of the world. There are a lot of games. Obviously, we know that the computer and the internet are forces for both good and evil. And we, as the parents, have to police the internet. But there is a lot of good stuff out there, a lot of games. A lot of them are free. A lot of them aren't free, but they aren't too terribly expensive. You have classic games like Math Blasters, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's a math game, but there are a lot of noises and booms and bangs and things like that. The Oregon Trail, which is an American both history and geography game. Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? It's an oldie but a goodie, but it's still around, and it teaches world geography. SimCity, all kinds of variations on SimCity, which teach basic engineering and planning. Now, the iPad is becoming very popular. I was able to attend a meeting the other night, Sunday, with some friends in St. Louis via Skype that I had missed last year. But I remember when I walked into that meeting last year, and these were adults, and every one of them, except me, had their iPad set up on a different kind of platform and standard. The iPad is getting to be pretty popular. And there are other tablets like the iPads. And there are literally thousands of applications or apps for the iPad and like devices. And I've given you a listing to show you some of the depth and the breadth of the possibilities. When we were moving to Europe, we stopped by in England for one day, in part to visit with some folks, but in part to deliver an iPad to a family whose youngest child has some learning problems. And let me tell you, those learning problems didn't look too difficult when she picked up that iPad and immediately, without any instruction, knew where to go, what to download, and how to do things with it. It's somehow been inserted into modern DNA, but not passed on from the parents.
You might want to talk to Philip about things like that. Philip over here, right? You know iPad stuff?
He's got an app or two.
Yeah, you could talk to him if you want to know more about that.
But there are things for Bible study and Christian learning, anywhere from actual studies to games, Bible stories. They can listen to and watch stories on the iPad directly from the Bible, Bible geography, and things like that. There's the App Store. It's not hard to find the App Store. You go to apple.com and sooner or later, it'll show somewhere where you can click on for the store because, of course, they want you to go there, so you'll spend your money there. But they have all kinds of variations of games, many of which are termed educational. Some of the others aren't termed educational, but really are. You have learn to read, learn to write type apps. You have grammar. You have the old-fashioned hangman, which for some kids will be a lot better if they can do it on that screen, because that's how they've learned to learn these days. You've got bingo, math bingo, preposition bingo, verb bingo, all kinds of things like that. You've got anatomy and physiology. You've got Star Walk. We were out in the middle of nowhere, somewhere in the Northern Frontier District last week, and we recognized there's no light pollution. Look at those stars. There are as many stars, this is how I phrase it, there were as many stars out there as freckles on an Irish woman's face. That's how many. There were a lot. And so we stopped, we got out, and we looked, and someone said, a lion will make a sound before he eats you, right? But then we looked back at the stars, and Walter whipped out his phone. He said, oh, yeah, I can tell you exactly what they are. He's got an app. And it looked up, and it showed you exactly what you were looking at. We were able to identify Jupiter, and then we watched it go down beyond the horizon. And since then, I have found that there are several apps that do this. And that one was free. And it's for your phone, iPad, iPhone or Android. Well, it's also for iPad. So you can learn astronomy by doing this. Coloring books, sketch pads. Symphony Pro teaches you about how music is created, therefore also teaching you about musical scales and such. Aviation simulations. All the SimCity and Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, all those old games have been adapted to be put on the iPad and on the iPhones or the Android phones. For those who have children with learning differences, you can go to, let me put this on here. Yeah, this is the experience of this young lady that we brought this iPad to in England.
Oh, it's on here. So they're going to get it, right?
Oh, that's right. I don't have to write. You're going to get it. But it's victorialily.blogspot.com, and there's an item on there. It's just titled iPad, and it's the experience with this young girl who has learning problems getting an iPad and exploring that iPad.
She's the youngest of 11 in a homeschool family, too, by the way. So,
yeah. A caution, which it does say on this sheet. These games can be informational. They can be educational. They can be motivating. And they can be addicting. So we, again, as the parents, need to set time frames and that sort of thing when we allow our children to do these things.
You're up. You don't go anywhere, right?
I'm not going
anywhere.
It's Q&A. Oh. Wait a minute. It says Q&A now. Therefore, we hope that we've done a good job of killing the myth. And with assistance from the congregation, we have talked about some games that can be good for learning, some games that can be good for immobilizing your brother. And
I'm glad that you brought that up, by the way, because there are a whole bunch of games I'm remembering from the playgrounds when I was a kid.
Which don't have the long names like yours.
Yeah. But
they're the same games we played.
Capture the Flag and Hopscotch and a lot of those things that really, really, a jump rope, Chinese jump rope, all those things I didn't even include, so thank you. Thank you so much.
But again, they're good
for
learning. This is not junk. This is not stuff we have to hide. Oops, the government officials are in the neighborhood. We have to hide the fact that we played a game once last week. You don't have to hide. These are good both for physical learning and for mental learning. So, time for question and answer.
Even for PR. When we play, when we're kids, we'd line up, and then you go to this side and this side. Now, if a new Karobia is a good friend of mine, but a lousy player, all I needed to do was stand next to him.
Okay, we had a game called Red Rover. Have you ever played Red Rover?
Maybe not enough.
Sometimes, yeah, sometimes it's played with young children. Sometimes it's played with the opposing football team.
Oh, dear.
And that was on the beach, and that was fun, unless you're my size, and they were all...
Yeah.
Red Rover, you have one line here. And the people on this side would say, Red Rover, send Carobia over. And he had to run as hard as he could, or as sneakily as he could, and get through the arms that we were holding together.
Yeah, you have to break the line. You have to break the way through the line.
Yeah, you have to try to break through. Now, he would do it by breaking through. Grobi would come over and fake that he was jumping over and then crawl. But we have time for questions, comments, and what have you.
We're going to talk about games again a little bit in another talk, so keep all this stuff in your mind.
For the test.
Yeah, see, once again, they're not answering. We're not taking... Oh, good. Oh, here we go.
I didn't hear much about like the physical games.
Mm-hmm.
The outdoor.
Mm-hmm. That's what... Right.
And I was hoping you'd say a lot.
Uh-oh.
That's why we said him.
That's why we had him talk. Do you mean organized sports and games like that, or do you mean the casual yard games like that would be in a schoolyard or just kids together? Tag and
organized
sports too.
Yes. And also just a comment about the computer games. The other games, the traditional games, they really build family ties. Mm-hmm. But many computer games tend to be individualistic
and, right.
Or just two-play.
Right.
And those guys don't talk much.
Right, that's why the caution.
So they just go to a corner.
Right. Don't say anything about organized games.
Yeah, let me tell you something about... When I was in elementary school, we would have recess at a certain time, which meant that they released you to go out in the yard and try to kill one another. And that happened all too often, so they decided they weren't going to have most of the boy games that we played, which were involved mayhem. And we were only allowed to play, this was the boys, we were only allowed to play jump rope and hopscotch. This was punishment. But we managed to play hopscotch with shoulders and knees. But hopscotch is a game where you draw something
boxes.
With boxes.
We call it msonge show.
Thank
you. Okay. And you have a little chip that you throw there. But that can be a learning game, both physically in terms of being able to hop in the right square and keep one foot up. And as long as I can do now.
He did really well, too.
But then you had to jump when you get to... The next one, you had to jump over the one and get to the two.
The girls probably beat you for a long time, huh?
I don't know what you're talking about. We didn't allow them to play. But you also had to you learn numbers and sequences along the way as well. So there were those kinds of games.
In terms of organized sports, some people might disagree with us on this, but we think that it's very important for parents to be aware of the environments in which they put their children. And so organized sports, you have to have a team so other children are involved. There are generally coaches and organizations and practices and all kinds of people involved. And so we've seen people, our girls, well, finished one thought first, right?
Yeah, good then.
We've seen some people that have had their children in organized sports and they've gone through and they've done really well and they've been able to maintain their Christian witness. So it's possible. That was not our choice. Our choice was to give our girls some opportunities in local town sports. Kurt would be a coach, so he was always there to see what the interactions were. And for them to just experience what it was like to be on a team and to get some of those skills. And I don't mean just physical skills, but team relationships that you have to have and leadership opportunities and that kind of thing. So they had a certain amount of that, but we didn't go beyond that. Now, it wasn't only because they were girls. It was because we didn't want to let them go into that environment unsupervised. They went into drama, and there were rehearsals, and they were with groups of people and so on, but we were always able to be there. I was always sitting right there at rehearsals and so on. So we felt we had more control in that particular environment. A lot of people in America, a lot of homeschool families in America choose to not have their children in any team sports of any kind. They just don't want them involved in that kind of competition or environment. And so they do all individual sports or things that they do together as a family. Others, as Kurt mentioned yesterday, there are homeschool places where there are so many homeschoolers that they have their own teams. And they either compete with other Christian homeschool teams or they compete with school teams, regular organized school teams. I think it really depends on the family. It depends on your philosophy of education, which we're going to work on a little bit later, and what you see for your child. You know, like the young quarterback in America now, his name is Tim Tebow, and he was born to parents serving the Lord in another country. That's where he was raised. And his father told him all along that, you know, whatever your platform is, wherever God puts you, that's your opportunity to speak about Christ. And he is now an athlete in America, and every opportunity he gets in every interview, he's talking about God. And so, you know, who am I to say that organized sports are wrong for everybody? God uses people wherever he chooses to use them, the way he chooses to use them. So, you know, the responsibility is really on you to sort your way through all of that for your family and your children and the call that God's placed on you. That's why this idea of what is your family vision is something that we're emphasizing. Is that helpful, Mena, at all? Thank you for bringing that up. And thank you, because there's, I realize this time that there's a little area that I need to beef up in this talk, because those are really important things. Yes?
I just want to comment on that. I think it depends a lot on the country, the climate, you know, whether the children play more outdoor games or indoor games. Mm-hmm. These indoor games are very kind of maybe European, North American thing because of the climate, and kids could not always be outside. In Africa, there's a lot of outdoor games. Mm-hmm. And also it has to do with availability of material. Mm-hmm. I mean, quite frankly, many kids have never seen a board game, you know, mm-hmm. Live in rural areas. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have spots like that in America too, and that's why people don't know about these things, and that's why we make the lists. Yes.
About the games, I think you're talking about that.
The organized sports, you mean?
No, the addictive computer games.
Ah, okay.
If you're more consistent and predictable about, you know, you can play on this from this time to this time. You know, the rest of the day, you're not constantly asking, you know, so they can be creative and say, okay, what am I going to do with this time? I'm on school right now, but I can't play with that until then. So then they get outside, they run, they swing, they go to the right, whatever, you know, that, and otherwise they're asking all day when they wake up in the morning, whenever they have a break.
We've been told.
We're told that it's tea time. But we're not going anywhere. Yes. So during tea, you can talk, ask questions, what have you. And we will be having a general Q&A session at the end as well.
Yes. And there'll be further times of Q&A, and they're still around for interaction. And I'm sure you'll mention some of this in the other sessions.
Right.